Feast week is in the books. Hopefully your stomachs are full, your fandom in good spirits at the moment. Mine is not. I am recording after Sienna got the brakes beat off them by rival UAlbany. Weird game. One of those things where like everything went so wrong that you almost like are like, all right, like either we are the worst team in college basketball or like that was just so random it can't happen again. But it wasn't fun. But I still had a great season, Brad. I hope you did well. I'm sure you did. We both watched insane amounts of basketball. I'm not sure I like left the house for 3 days. It's pretty great.
How much TV control did you have on Thanksgiving?
100% TV control. We have a very small Thanksgiving going on. I was locked in. I took a break to eat. That was about it.
I had more control than normal. It's still not the full 100%, which didn't really matter this year. Like it was a good crop of games, like without a doubt.
Yes.
But in P180 years, it goes to a different level. Right, like this ESPN Events Invitational that wrapped up today, like the field was good, but it wasn't like you drop what you're doing.
Right, you could miss Texas A&M, Penn State.
And there were usually at least one or two other 8-team prominent ESPN tournaments that ended on Sunday, too. I don't know what happened to those.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, the stuff definitely lightened into this weekend, but we did have some of the like smaller events. Like we had that 4-teamer on San Diego that was UCLA, or not UCLA, USC, Oklahoma, Iowa, yeah. And Seton Hall. Like we had enough to keep us kind of going throughout the weekend. I thought it was pretty balanced.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. Winners, losers. We'll get into all of that here on this episode of the show. So stick with us throughout. We've got, you know, try to get to your team as best we can. I guess Brad would probably place to start, even though it's not the most recent thing, is Maui, just because it was, you know, billed as historic. And I think probably mostly lived up to the hype. Like there was no one like Maui moment, right? Like obviously when you think about past years, there have been some like truly epic games. Like that Duke Gonzaga game with Rui versus Zion was an incredible game. The OB versus Kansas game was an incredible game, right? Like we didn't have that, but we had some really good basketball, obviously some of the best teams in the country involved. And I think if nothing else, it was just a great learning tournament for really all seven power fives in the field. Personally, you know, obviously I think Purdue winning was probably the most impressive thing to go through 3 days and 3 games in 3 days. But like, I didn't see anything from any of the top four, right? So I came in to this thing thinking that Marquette, Purdue, Kansas, and Tennessee were all like legitimate national title level teams. I didn't see anything throughout the week that discouraged me from that take. So like 30,000 feet, did you come in feeling the same way as I did? And do you leave feeling the same way I did?
So, I mean, first, to get something off my chest.
Sure.
The 5 o'clock Wednesday championship, I will never be able to watch. Like every year I'm driving to my Thanksgiving destination during that time. I imagine I'm not the only one. I imagine most people are probably unavailable at 5 o'clock on that Wednesday.
It is kind of like a perfect summary of college basketball. All right, like here's our like biggest, our most notable game of the year in like the non-conference, and we place it at 5 p.m. on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
Which that's like a last like 3 or 4 year thing maybe, but just put it on ESPN2 at 8:30. Have it staggered with the NBA start. It's different audiences anyway.
I agree with you. I wish there was a way we could get it better. I don't know, again, what the deal is other than just Wednesday NBA needs to be on there and that's how they build it. And they want to be on ESPN proper. But, yeah, it's frustrating. No question.
Second, back to the actual basketball at hand. I stayed up Monday and Tuesday for both Marquette games in their entirety. I was pretty surprised by how Marquette just demolished Kansas. Hunter Dickinson didn't really seem super engaged. And it's, you know, a thing that we've talked about 100 times and every podcast has talked about 100 times. When you break down the Kansas roster and it's glue guy Dewan Harris and glue guy KJ Adams and Kevin McCullough looks to have taken a step and Hunter Dickinson, right? That's a great foursome. It doesn't fit super well together. You need one of three things to pair as the fifth starter. Either a shooter, and Nick Timberlake has been awful.
Yep.
He looks, you know, frazzled out there.
He is honestly one of the worst so far. Obviously, he's a whole year. He is as bad an up transfer, like big name up transfer I can remember. Like, he's worse than like the Joe Cremos and like things like that. Like, it's approaching like full on bust.
I mean, Cremo was really bad. But no one's denying it has been a huge bust so far. But so you could use a shooter, which they're not getting with Timberlake. You could use like a microwave scorer, which you're not getting with El Marco Jackson, but no one should be selling stock there yet. And then lastly, you know, a wing with size, Johnny Furphy's not there yet either. So your options, you know, you would probably want either Jackson or Timberlake, you know, to really grab hold of that starting shooting guard spot. And when you're not getting anything from those guys, this Kansas roster looks very pedestrian.
Yeah, I mean, look, like, It's funny that Kansas can somehow do impressive shit, and every single time you talk about them, it still comes across as, like, pretty negative, right? I mean, think about it this way. They won Champions Classic over Kentucky. Kentucky, who looks incredible to watch. So much fun, so dynamic, so much power, firepower. And, all right, like, Kansas was good, but, like, Kentucky looked better. And, again, I said that, I believe it. Kentucky's more dynamic, more talented. Then Kansas beats Tennessee at this event, right? They go 1-1 against two high-end teams. And everyone's like, well, you know, they really need that fifth starter. And it's true, right? Like, they do need that extra piece to feel really good about this group. But the status quo right now is still a team that can beat anyone in the country on any given night. And a team that will probably win the Big 12, that will probably get a million quad one wins, right? Like, the floor is so high because Dickinson's overwhelming. And I actually thought that Kansas made real strides this past week with, like, how they were spacing the floor with KJ and Hunter 4 or 5. Like, I thought they did a better job with some of the high-low stuff. I thought they did a better job lifting Hunter. I thought they did a little bit better job letting him sit in the dunker and KJ in short roll. Like, I thought they did. I think they're making strides there. And I thought Furphy had a couple of moments. Jamari McDowell had a couple moments. Jamari McDowell is the new Dale Bonner, where everyone is going to make fun of him. Like, every time he's in the game, it's like, well, see, Kansas has no depth. They're playing Jamari McDowell. But Jamari McDowell is actually, like, helping them a little bit. So I wouldn't, like, so from what we've watched from Kansas, I think the opinion is the same, right? Like, nothing, they've done nothing to, like, talk me out of them being good enough.
Yeah, I mean, I had them 6 in the preseason, and I think I'm keeping them around there. I think I said the same exact thing last week. But, yeah, it feels underwhelming, but when you look up and you have a neutral court win against Tennessee and Kentucky already, you're doing okay. They have UConn, I believe, on Friday.
Yes, at home. Friday night.
That will be a clear-the-schedule type of game. And then kind of moving off to Tennessee. I didn't watch Kansas Tennessee. I had enough of, you know, Tennessee. I've seen them so many times. I was locked in on Texas Tech Nova at that time slot. But anyway, Tennessee, Ziegler's not Ziegler yet. Ganey's kind of fallen off a cliff after an impressive, I'm going to say impressive start, but that impressive game may have been the preseason game. But so they're not getting enough from those two guys where you kind of penciled them in for more. And then in the front court, you know, they had some injuries, like Awaka missed a game. They were beaten down by Purdue. Ton of foul trouble. Edie really dominated Jonas Adu, which I thought Adu would give him a little tougher a test, but that, you know, just immediate foul trouble across the board. But again, tennis, you know, the field was so strong that even with Tennessee's guards kind of underperforming, they're still on track to be a top 10 team again.
Yeah, so on the Tennessee front, I saw a lot of like, oh, you know, Tennessee's actually not as good. This is the same old Tennessee. They can't score. They can't, you know, they have no firepower, whatever. Like, I thought Tennessee looked substantially better still. They have a real score and connect. Those guys are not going to continue to really struggle the way that they have. Like, Sakai Ziegler's a better player than he's playing right now. Vescovi is still kind of getting his feet under him. You know, you do see some of the things that limit them, right? I think, as you mentioned, Adu, like, they do not have that, like, really high-end big guy, that interior presence, right? And if you're going to be a physical team, if you're going to be a defensive-minded team, you do want to have that one guy in the middle that you really trust.
But, I mean, I trust Adu. It's just he got, like, I think against right. 99% of the centers, he's going to make an impact defensively. But Edie is just out of this world.
Right. Yes. And that was a problem in the Tennessee-Purdue game, was just the physicality from Edie. I don't know. I still believe in Tennessee. I will say it was a little bit concerning seeing how pedestrian their guards looked. Like, Ziegler and Vescovi just did not look like dudes in those high-end games. But, you know, I still think that they have the recipe to be right there. And I, you know, again, they lost two close games to two really good teams, and they did so shooting the ball really poorly. And they have good shooters on that team. And I fully believe Tennessee will shoot the ball well this year. So, yeah, not selling any stock there. All right, to the championship group, and then we can kind of quick hit the rest. I thought Marquette was what you wanted Marquette to be, right? Like, Oso has clearly made the jump. To me, that's the
he's
number one.
Awesome. Yeah.
He is now fully confident as a, like, true center. Like, he is not getting destroyed the same way on the block that he was last year. He's more assertive offensively when he's taking those floaters. He's obviously still an incredible passer. I know I think his assist numbers are actually down this year by a good amount, but I think a lot of that is that he is more assertive, right? He is more willing to feel out contact. He is more willing to go score. And he's not just, you know, they're not just playing through him. I think they're playing through Kolick a little bit more in terms of letting him back you down and then spray. And then obviously Cam Jones is Cam Jones. Like, that three is great. Now, has anyone outside of that group stepped up in a major way? I'm not quite sure I've seen that. But Sean Jones is a pest and a presence. I think Ben Gold will wind up being on the floor in a lot of big moments for them this year. Joplin hit shots in the UCLA game, which was huge. They don't win that game without him. You know, I thought Ross had kind of a rough week, but he's still good. Like, Marquette looks the way you would have wanted Marquette to look, right? Do they have a title ceiling? We'll see. But I think they're among the best teams in the sport, just in terms of how hard they are to guard, the way they pressure you defensively, and the fact that they have an awesome point guard, an awesome wing, and an awesome center, right? Like, that's not rocket science, right? Like, teams that have elite wing, elite point guard, elite center, I have to imagine the numbers are pretty good on them competing for Final Fours and titles.
Right, so the whole Marquette upside is really tied to how their bench from last year really makes the jump this year. Right. So far, Joplin has been a little underwhelming. You mentioned he did have that was the UCLA game where he hit a bunch of shots. Sean Jones, I thought, had a great tournament. Chase Ross has been a tad underwhelming. And then Ben Gold is just, you know, I think next year Ben Gold is going to be like a really impact starter when Oso's gone. for now, they're probably better with him just in that 8 to 10 minute a game role.
I think there's a world where they're going to play a lot. Like, I don't know what the matchup will be, but I think they could play Kolick, Jones, Joplin, Iguodaro, Gold.
And Gold.
I like that lineup because there's enough shooting, there's enough playmaking, and it gives you a little bit more defensively, and it allows Oso to roam a little bit and not take fouls. And I thought they did that a little bit. I'd have to look back on like the total possession numbers, but I think they did do that some in that Purdue game.
It's just with Marquette, right? One of their defining traits is their speed.
Right.
Getting Chase Ross and Sean Jones in there.
And Stevie Mitchell.
Stevie Mitchell, I think I might be moving off any Stevie Mitchell stock.
I don't quite understand what Stevie Mitchell brings that Sean Jones doesn't, other than he's 3 inches taller.
Right, he's a little bigger. He's a better defender. And he started to hit shots in the tournament, which he hadn't hit a single jumper before that. But between Ross and Jones, I think they have more upside, and they can give you the same kind of fifth starter type qualities there. But it's tough. I mean, they were on the ropes against UCLA. That UCLA played really well, like, Sebastian Mack was awesome. Dylan Andrews was automatic. Bono looked incredible. And that's even without their international guys getting going. So I wonder what the conversation we're having is if Marquette, you know, if the, that was the Sean Jones go ahead three, right? Like if that three doesn't go down and then Marquette plays Chaminade and then ends up beating, or I mean, they could have lost to Gonzaga in the fifth place game as well. So I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves on Marquette because there was a real path where, you know, like I think Marquette's a top 10 team. I don't think that they're a title contender yet.
I think the best thing you can say about Marquette is you watched them this weekend and you didn't see anything worse than what they were last year, which is like a top 2 to 3 seed in the NCAA tournament. There was no regression, which I think was possible, right? We talked about this, right? Like when you're a whole greater than sum of parts team, sometimes that can happen. They're clearly still right there.
So we talked to UCLA. I did not stay up for the UCLA Gonzaga game. I couldn't do 3 days in a row.
I made it to halftime.
But I saw Gonzaga, Purdue. Grant Ike is playing well. Watson's doing his thing. They're getting great mileage from Braden Huff. Again, kind of similar to Marquette. I'm fine with them as like a top 10 team or so, but they don't feel like a title contender.
Yeah, Gonzaga's in a hard spot where, like, they just feel very limited roster-wise, right? And part of that is just the depth, and they haven't had a lot of that in their control. When Steel Ventures gets hurt and, you know, they had the retirement from Perry, who I don't know was going to play a ton, but, like, it's a scholarship player. Like, they have 10 scholarship players. Three of them are, like, super raw freshmen. And so it's just like, all right, like, we have Ike, Huff, Greg all in the front, and Watson all in the front court, and then we have Nembhard, Hickman, and Dusty Stromer as our three, and like that's it. They're gonna need Dusty to hit shots. He needs to space it. Their guards have shot it really poorly. Nembhard is 2 for 16. Hickman is 6 for 21. Stromer is 4 for 14. Like, they're gonna have to find a way to make threes. Yeah, I think they're gonna win the WCC. I think they're gonna win a million games. It'll be interesting to see how they handle, like, USC coming up here next week, Washington in a couple weeks, like, with that level of game. But, you know, I really like the front court. I think they can do some interesting stuff to you. Like, Watson, to me, has taken more of an offensive jump than I expected he would. Like, he's very skilled. Huff, as you mentioned, has been found money. Yeah, I didn't come away, like, enthralled, though. I thought they were about where I expected them to be. I thought UCLA, like, they're really coming. Like, Sebastian Mack is way better than I thought he would be. I thought Burke really made some, like, pop plays in his minutes. You know, again, look, he's just now getting accustomed to college basketball. But, like, the fact that they look competitive right now, given all of that, given Burke and Mata have struggled as much as they have. Like, Bona looks like a dude. Mack's awesome downhill. They've got some guys who can step out and shoot, which is big. I know they haven't made them, but, like, they need, like, Stefanovic to make shots. They need, like, I guess the way I would frame it is this. UCLA has gotten virtually nothing out of Mata, Vide, and Burke. Three potential first-round picks. And they still played two possessions against Gonzaga and one possession against Marquette. If it clicks, this team is going to be very, very good.
Yeah, but I believe they have UConn coming up as well. So they will certainly be tested.
On the Syracuse, let's take Syracuse very quickly, and then we'll talk about Purdue, and we can move on to another term. Did you have any Syracuse thoughts?
Yeah, so I actually thought that their fives looked good as, like, role player fives. Like, McLeod looked like he was moving okay. He was blocking shots. And then Malik Brown is, like, really good in passing lanes. He's a really switchable five. I guess the issue is J.J. Starling, like, shoulder injury. He can't shoot anymore. Judah Mintz is great. I'm not sure if Judah Mintz is All-American. And then just kind of overall the youth slash talent level didn't live up to the rest of the field. Like Justin Taylor, I don't know what happened to his jump shot. It's got, like, incredible amount of XX motion. He's, like, not even close.
Yeah.
Benny Williams was either hurt or suspended or something. I don't remember exactly what. Chance Westry's hurt. Chris Bell's a fine shooter, but, you know, they were just missing some more higher level talent to compete with the other top six teams in the field.
I also think they just play very, like, individualistic. Like, Judah walks down the floor, he tries to cross you up. J.J. Starling walks down the floor, he tries to cross you up. Chris Bell takes his turn. Like, it's very, like, take turns putting up shots. Like, how did Chris Bell shoot 18 balls against Gonzaga?
I don't remember which game it was, but there was one game where he was on fire from three. It might have been Tennessee.
He also had a big game against Colgate shooting the ball from three. A big comeback. I don't know if you were watching. I guess it was Champions Classic Day, so you weren't. Yeah. But yeah, like, I still think the ceiling is a tournament team, right? I mean, the big one coming up this week against LSU. Have to win that game at home. But, like, they'll have some opportunities. They have LSU. They have Oregon on a neutral. They have early conference game against Virginia coming up this weekend on the road. Like, they got to win a couple of these, but I think you do see the flashes. And then obviously, Brad, Purdue is Purdue, right? Like, each guard had one really big game. Lance had the 13 against Gonzaga. Fletch had that 27 against Tennessee. And then in the championship game, Braden Smith was really good.
You got Trey Kaufman hitting jumpers. He had Lance Jones throwing in 80 footers. And then Edie was Edie. Fletcher Lawyer had, yeah. Was that the Tennessee game that Fletcher Lawyer had, like, 27 points?
Yeah, Tennessee.
Yeah.
I know we don't take early victory laps around here, but I do want some Braden Smith flowers. Because he is clearly very good.
See, now we can roll this into Battle for Atlantis. Because the one early victory lap wasn't even a victory lap. It was an admission of ignorance that I did do last week. The only one. I was, all right, we saw Michigan beat Marquette in the scrimmage. They ran through some early bye games. They destroyed St. John's. Okay, I give in. They're actually good. I was surprised that no one else was, you know, that people weren't flocking to rank them so high. And it seems like other people, like the three-man weave, I think, as well. And I think Rob Doster said it as well. You know, the people that were really paying attention to this stuff were in my camp with, okay, Michigan is just awesome. And then they go out. They get really get destroyed in Battle for Atlantis.
Yeah, like, I thought they were the better team against Memphis. And then just, like, completely just could not get a stop in the second half when they needed one, right? The Ashton Hardaway, 17 points with backbreaking. But I thought, like, I really thought that Michigan was the better team most of the way. But then they played bad against Stanford. Probably, like, they earned a win, but, like, they weren't impressive. And then just got worked by Texas Tech. Like, to me, that was surprising. And now part of it is, like, Doug McDaniel can't be dominant every night. Like, Doug was on such a heater early on. He turns around against Memphis, and he has 13 points on 15 shots. He turns around against Texas Tech. He has 12 points on 12 shots. Like, it's not going to be – if your offense is not relying on one guy, you have a ceiling. And we talked about it too, right? Like, they've been getting all the mileage they possibly could out of Namari Burnett shooting the basketball. Well, Namari Burnett turns around and shoots 0 for 4 against Texas Tech and 1 for 10 from the field. Terrence Williams shooting the basketball. Terrence Williams shoots 4 for 5 in the win against Stanford, but he shoots 1 for 5 against Texas Tech and the 0 for 4 in the loss to Memphis and 2 for 7 against Long Beach State. Even down to, like, Trey Jackson, 0 for 2 against Texas Tech, 1 for 2 against Memphis, didn't really score. Will Cheddar, like, if they were all about shooting, right, it's shooting at Doug, they were going to be high variance. And I think that's what you're starting to see.
But I think the real story from the Battle for Atlantis was just the bounce back from Villanova.
Unbelievable.
So I watched the Texas Tech Villanova game and the UNC Villanova game in its entirety, both the games. And then I was stuck in traffic going to the Dunk on Friday while they were playing Memphis. But when I checked the score, it was like 44-16. But in that Texas Tech game, the Texas Tech game was basically defined with, like, Justin Moore and Eric Dixon were, like, on another planet. They were so incredibly good. And everyone else was, like, kind of disappointing. Like, TJ Bamba and Tyler Burton and everybody were kind of disappointing. And Moore and Dixon just could not be stopped. I mean, Dixon, I've kind of ragged on him because he doesn't play any defense. But if he's going to fire these contested threes off screens and be one of the only real stretch fives in the whole sport, and just, you know, knock down threes and then post up and bury guys on the other end, that's just such a tough cover. And I you know, the Villanova roster construction, I was in on it in the preseason. I didn't remember TJ Bamba being, like I said, as thick as he was, and Tyler Burton and Hakeem Hart don't seem as athletic as I remember them being. This roster really is like four guys the same size that can kind of bully you physically around Eric Dixon. But when they hit shots and when Dixon and Moore play at all conference levels, Villanova is going to be one tough out.
Right. Yeah. Like, I think you said it best, right? Like, Moore and Dixon playing at all conference levels. Those guys were amazing this week. The talent really pops when those guys are as good as they are, because the transfers are not guys you can ignore, right? Like, I think they still haven't had one really emerge as a dude. Like, I haven't looked around and be like, oh man, like, here comes TJ Bamba's 15 points a game, or like, here comes Tyler Burton. But you can't overplay those guys the way that you did last year, because they will hurt you. Tyler Burton will hurt you. Hakeem Hart is capable of hurting you. Min Longino, I think, has made a step. He's been super efficient. He's been very active. Like, he's again, that same size guy. Housen has established himself as, like, a key role shooter guy. So, I mean, I like what I've seen. Obviously, the Penn game is the Penn game. But, like, this team would be, like, consensus top 10 if they had not lost that game. And maybe they'll still wind up there. I really have a tremendous amount of belief here based on this week's performance. I mean, what they did to Memphis was unbelievable. Like, I was floored. Memphis was not amazing this week, but I thought Memphis looked pretty good. And Villanova just tore them to shreds. The North Carolina game, I think, again, the offensive talent just, like, very on display. Even in a game that they didn't shoot the ball particularly well, Dixon's full package offensively was really, really hard to stop. And they got enough from everybody else. And they have tremendous balance. They have like seven guys that you trust to score 8 points a game, which that alone is pretty good. And then you just level on that, whatever Dixon and Moore and one of these guys maybe emerging does. And it's a pretty good recipe. So that was impressive. I thought North Carolina actually played pretty well. Like, I thought it was a good.
Harrison Ingram looks great.
Yes. Thinner, shooting the ball extremely well from three, finally in that connector role that he needs to be. My main concern with Carolina is that Bacot just doesn't look like Bacot.
You think it was the NIL money, kind of lost focus?
I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the style of play. I don't know if it's him just getting, like, he's been so beat up over the years. I don't know if it's – I think he had huge numbers in all the bad games. Maybe he just was out of it during – you know, you're in the Bahamas or he's sick or under the – you know, something going on. But he did not look – like, statistically, Bacot is in the same group as the elite of the elite centers. He didn't look like that. But when Cormac Ryan's shooting the ball and RJ Davis is making plays, and, like, I think Cadeau has been a little bit disappointing, but he still makes some pop plays, and, like, as a second unit point guard is great. They have a lot of firepower offensively. I think still kind of figuring out that four spot. I do like them smaller. The question is, like, how small? Because I don't like Jalen Withers in the game, but I don't know necessarily who the fifth guy is if it's not him.
Yeah, Withers got the start, at least in the Nova game. I don't remember him doing much, but with Ingram playing as well as he is, Davis with hitting shots, Cormac Ryan with hitting shots, Trimble, I thought, played well. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the answer, is Ingram at the four and Trimble at the two. Slide right down.
It is going to be tough sledding defensively if they're playing Cadeau with Davis.
And Cormac Ryan as well.
Correct.
And then Jalen Washington, I thought, so showed some flashes too.
If Jalen Washington never hits the portal, it's going to be like silly season how excited people are about him.
Well, I mean, he should be the starter next year.
Probably.
As a junior. There was someone else. Oh, it was Pierre Brooks, where I see everyone's tweeting like, oh, he has X amount of threes already, and Michigan State has this many as a team, and oh, Michigan State really could use Pierre Brooks right now. It's like, well, like, yeah, that's – especially if Tom Izzo is going to play this old school with roster construction, like, your top 75 recruit should be a starter as junior. And I get change of scenery and everything, but without Pierre Brooks is playing, looks like he probably could have been the fifth starter for Michigan State as a junior. And I think that's what Jalen Washington, you know, could do for UNC next year as a junior starting center. Or if he hits the portal, as you said, people will go crazy. He'll average, you know, 15-7 or something as a starting center for, like, Texas Tech. And everyone will be like, what happened to UNC?
Arkansas, how concerned are we? They've done this dance before. That being said, the point guard thing's a problem, the shooting's a problem, and they have not been very good defensively, which is a pretty big concern.
I think the biggest problem is that Trevon Brazil is not, you know, some people had him as an All-American. I thought he was more prospect than player. Like, he was still, like, a legitimate NBA draft prospect, but not somebody who's going to elevate your team that much. Yeah. I think that's what we'd say he's been like so far. they're getting very little from their collection of five men. Pretty surprised that Mekhi Mitchell has seemingly taken a step back. Tremont Mark was awesome, and I don't know which game that was that he had 27 points. All these games are running together for me. There was one game where he couldn't miss.
He had 25 against Stanford. He had 34 and really couldn't miss against Carolina and then got
hurt. That was the one. Okay. So Mark's been a little better, but Ellis and Davis and Battle and Davenport and Brazil have all, you know, the rest of the roster has probably been worse than expected. I had Arkansas, I think, 40th in the preseason, which is very low compared to everyone else. They can still figure it out, but my whole reason for putting them 40th was I didn't think that the talent was there. I thought there was a weird collection of transfers, and I thought that Brazil was more prospect than player.
Yeah. L. Ellis did not score a single point in Atlantis.
Where are we on Louisville transfers as a whole?
I mean, none of them are good, right?
Withers, not so much, right?
L. Ellis, no. Really bad.
Lands is no. Sidney Curry, I guess, has been playing well for Grand Canyon, but
Fabio Basile is coming off the bench for UT Arlington.
I forgot all about him. So in next portal season, we're saying stay away from Dennis Evans and Brenly Hunden Hatfield, and White is stuck. Michael James could portal, yeah. So stay away from Louisville guys making a major impact on your team.
But I think for Arkansas, like, they got to defend better, full stop. They have to figure out who they're playing at point guard, right? Like, if it's L. Ellis, it's L. Ellis. If it's not, then, like, force feed these laden blocker minutes. Figure it out. It's just they're a hard watch right now because they don't do a whole lot well other than just, like, out-tough you sometimes. Any other big Atlantis takes? Texas Tech was fine. I thought Texas Tech would be a tournament team, but not like anything more than that.
Yeah. Trying to think back. Yeah, in that game, I think because Texas Tech came in with such a low three-point shooting acumen percentage, with, you know, threat, Villanova was closing out short on their three-pointers. And between Chance McMillan and obviously Pop Isaacs and Toussaint, you know, everyone was knocking down threes, which I don't think was in the scouting report. But Villanova pulled away
in that game.
Yeah. A lot of those were either late or short closeouts. I don't know how much schematic that was and how much bad defense that was, but Villanova pulled away there. Kyle Neptune is cursed, too. He got a coaching box violation. Which those get warnings every game. I don't know if I've ever seen the technical assessed for that. At least not usually. He got one in the Texas Tech game for being too far out of the coach's box. I was like, this guy's just cursed. But they rallied and pulled away in that game. Yeah, that's it for Texas Tech. And then Stanford, who's in a rough spot right now. It is funny when they were whatever 2-0 or something. Jared Bynum's mom was taking shots at Cooley on Twitter, like, "Oh, look how nice it is to be in a competent offense" or something like that.
He had 0 points in 22 minutes against Northern Iowa.
What did I say when Stanford picked up Bynum? I said Jared Haas is going to be laying awake at 8 a.m. on Saturday morning, saying, "I hope my point guard doesn't go 2-for-10 today." Assists are nice and everything, but the ball's got to go in.
Yeah, Stanford was frustrating because I thought they actually had some really nice moments against Arkansas. They had some really nice moments against Michigan. Again, we ragged on both those teams, so take it with somewhat of a grain of salt. But, like, for them to just turn around and lay an egg, right? Like, you go home with a win over Northern Iowa, and everybody can be, like, not at each other's throats for a week, right? Like, all right, we went to Atlantis. We won a game. We were competitive against teams that are probably NCAA tournament teams. We just need to get over the hump. And instead, you go 0-3, you get blown out by Northern Iowa, you get tanked in the metrics, you've gone from 42-91 since the preseason. You've lost the four games that matter on your schedule: Santa Clara, Arkansas, Michigan, and Northern Iowa. It's gonna be a hard road. Like, they have a light schedule here the next couple weeks. Stanford only plays twice between now and December 21st, and three times between now and December 29th, which is pretty crazy. But that's a function of the academic calendar at Stanford and everybody else's finals weeks and whatnot. But they've really crammed in a bunch here, and now we'll slow things down. But yeah, just kind of curious to see if there's any fight left. I mean, look, we've talked about the challenges at Stanford. Everyone understands the academic issues, but like get me to an NIT. Like, do something. Like,
I mean, this is a good roster.
Correct.
If we weren't already selling all the Jared Haas stock, we would probably have this team in the tournament. Multiple people I saw had them as a tournament team in the preseason. The roster has talent. They got 5-star Stojakovic, Keenan Carlisle was a great recruit. They got, for all my hate of Jared Bynum, I mean, he did average double figures in the Big East. They got shooters galore. Reynolds playing well, and it's gonna be it. This has to be it for Jared Haas.
You would think. All right, let's go to the ESPN Events Invitational. Start, I think, with our 8-teamers, then we'll go to the 4s. FAU really rolls through this thing. Controlled Texas A&M throughout the second half. Blew the doors off of Virginia Tech today by 34. That's a big metrics win. I mean, talk about bouncing back from Bryant, where you score 52 points, you shoot a ghastly percentage from the field, I think under 30%, to then beat Butler, A&M, and then Virginia Tech on 3 straight nights, get 3 high major wins. Honestly, 3 high major wins that will seemingly at least be quad 2, right? You never want to count your chickens, but like Virginia Tech seems like it will not suck. Butler seems like it will not suck. A&M is like a potential like legit ranked win. This should, if nothing else, stabilize FAU as like a top 25 type team. Right, Brad?
At least for now. Now they have Illinois coming up on a neutral, and they have Arizona coming up. I don't know if that's neutral or not.
It is Vegas. Yeah.
Vegas.
And they also have Bonaventure in Springfield, and they host Liberty and Charleston in the Field of 68 event.
So that's tough sledding, but yeah, their guards looked great today. Golden was dominant. Marvin shots, they just completely overmatched Vatek. It was close for what, like the first 10 minutes or so? Yeah. Lynn Kidd was getting some shots, Padula was getting some shots. But Couture was like ice cold at one point. Virginia Tech, I still think they're like an NIT sort of team.
Yeah.
Florida Atlantic, though, when they were getting that type of play from their Davis and Martin duo and Golden up front, they're going to be right there at the top of the American. Are you still going FAU over Memphis at this point?
I think after today, I would take FAU, yeah. But Memphis is right there. I will say, I mean, you mentioned Golden. Like, he, to me, is the biggest difference. I thought he looked so good against Loyola in the opener when I saw them in person. Again, obviously, look, it's a one-off game. Loyola was playing a freshman 5 and an injured 5. Like, it was, but he had 19-10, looked really good. So for him to follow up that performance with 19-11 against Butler, and then 14 on 7 shots today against Virginia Tech, like that's the difference maker that he is. And if he's going to play well and the guards are going to be there, which Martin kind of finally reemerged, that's huge. Now, Nick Boyd is now injured. Sounds like he'll be back somewhat soon. He's an important part of their team. Great defender, good shooter. But they're deep. They make threes. They're really connected and together. And they have that interior presence now with Golden. So all in all, a very good week for them. I agree with you, Virginia Tech. NIT, the Iowa State win will be nice for them in particular. I thought that Lynn Kidd's jump has been impressive to watch. But, man, like, they just don't have a ton of firepower. Like, I don't get scared of them 2 through 5. Really 2 through 4, because I like Kidd.
Can we talk Iowa State for a minute?
I was just about to say we should talk Iowa State.
So I was unable to watch, actually, I think all of the Iowa State. I wasn't able to watch any of these games of Iowa State. And before that, there's beat up by games. So someone who has eyes on them. Yeah, this is meant as a question posed for someone who has seen Iowa State. Are we counting our chickens here? Right, like they barely beat VCU.
Yeah.
They escape here against, or sorry, they blew a huge lead against A&M that was missing guys. Looking at, you know, Pavelecki was supposed to be a huge part of this team. This was like the first game that he played serious minutes. Omaha Ballou has like barely been a rotation player, which is kind of stunning. I thought he was supposed to be their best player after how he played at FIBA. Hassan Ward's hurt. I see a lot of, you know, obviously people are pushing them to be ranked. Oh, they look so good. They've improved so much in their analytics from the start of the year and everything. But are we quite sure Iowa State is actually good?
Yeah, I mean, they just suck the life out of some of the worst teams in the country. Like, it's one thing to win by games. And another thing to beat Green Bay 324, Lindenwood 336, Idaho State 261, and Grambling 327. And they blew the doors off them. They beat Lindenwood by 55. They beat Grambling by 55. They beat Green Bay by 44 or 41, excuse me. Like, I get it. It's impressive. But to me, like, it seemed as though the real excitement offensively was, wow, look how much better they are shooting the ball. And a lot of that was Milan Momcilovic. Well, they turn around this week and they shoot 16 for 68 from three. 24%, I believe, off the top of my head. That's not going to cut it, right? Like, they don't have super dynamic guards, right? Like, Lipsy has shot it better. Lipsy is a paint-touch guard. But if their offense is going to be like Lipsy and Gilbert ISO, I just don't know how good they can really be, right? It's going to be the same shit, which is if they're a top-five defense, they're a tournament team. If they're not a top-five defense, good luck. Now, they are going to rip off more wins here. They play DePaul next. That's basically a bye game. They have Iowa at home. That's a game they win at Hilton. And then they go to wrap up the non-con. Prairie View, very bad. Florida A&M, way worse. Eastern Illinois, maybe even worse than that. And then New Hampshire. So whoever's doing the scheduling for TJ Otzelberger is doing a really good job, because Iowa State's going to rip off the next five, maybe six games. They're going to be 11-2, they're going to be ranked heading into conference play, but I don't see how this is much more than a 500 team in the Big 12.
So you think if they win out their non-con, they'll be ranked?
Probably. Maybe I'm tripping, but
I guess there's a lot of moving pieces and everything.
A&M has been sneaky good offensively. I will say that. Wade Taylor has been like next level, really good guard.
And they've been missing, obviously, Julius Marvel this whole time. And then today, Henry Coleman, in the past two games, Radford, is that right?
Yeah, no Coleman today. No Radford just today. He played against.
Okay.
He only played a half against FAU, it looks like.
And now, this is a team at fuller strength. Does have a opening week road win at Ohio State.
Which is aging well.
They just beat Iowa State, and they have the loss to the Supernova FAU offense. I think I'm kind of holding them as is. I mean, I ranked Wade Taylor in the preseason as a top 10 player. Basically a second team All-American. Looks like Hefner and Garcia have taken a step. I know a lot of people really like Solomon Washington. I want to see more, though. I didn't have Peacock for the Buckeye game opening week, and I was only able to catch some of Florida Atlantic game. So
I will say this. Last year, they were very pedestrian in terms of taking care of the ball. This year, they're taking care of it really, really well. And even like today you're playing Iowa State, one of the best turnover teams in the country. Only 13 turnovers against FAU, a good defense, 12 turnovers. Penn State, Mike Rhodes' defense, obviously they've struggled on that end of the floor, but that's a team that wants to force turnovers, 10 turnovers. If A&M is going to not give away possessions and they're going to hit the offensive glass the way any Buzz team will, they're going to be awesome offensively, even if they don't shoot it that well, even if they don't have a ton of skill, because they're just going to crush you in possessions. They're going to take 15 more shots a game than you. If they take 15 more shots a game than you, they're probably going to win. So, trying to think of any other teams we really want to hit on this tournament.
I mean, Butler got a nice litmus test win over Boise State. Those are two teams you'd probably say that they were in similar spots coming into today.
Probably, where, yeah.
With Boise State, you probably thought higher of them in the preseason. They didn't have any losses that truly would kill you. But they haven't looked as good as expected. Butler's looked better than expected. You know, from people thinking that, myself included, that they were going to be very bad this year. So two teams that were...
Pierre Brooks is really the swing there, right? I mean, I don't think any of us saw him being like a... elite level, maybe elite by overshooting, but like really high end wing. I didn't see that.
He was on my breakout players list because I thought he would score it, but he's been better than I thought. Posh has been probably better than I thought as well. And Butler has another litmus test game, I believe on Thursday, playing Texas Tech at home.
Yep, that's a game you should win. Like and if then, you're at home, like that's a game you win. If you're like, if you're going to compete to play in the NCAA tournament, it's a game you win.
And then the remaining non-con, Buffalo at home, Cal at home.
Big disappointment.
And then a non-D1, which if you're playing Rush the Court Eliminator Challenge, the week that Butler has only their game against Saginaw Valley, that's the one to take Butler.
Yeah, I thought they were good. Boise was disappointing to me. Yeah, I just don't know that they have, you know, and like this has been kind of a tradition for them. Like last year, they start 1-2, they lose to Charlotte and score 42 points. 2 years ago, they started 3-4, lost to Bakersfield at home, scored 39 points. Like they've had some of these slow starts and still gotten themselves back to at-large contention just by how they play in the Mountain West. But like, they just don't look super talented.
And now, in the preseason for the Mountain West, I had three teams. I had San Diego State, I had Boise, and I had New Mexico. I think if we were to remake a preseason bracketology today, right now, I think we'd still have three Mountain West teams.
Yeah.
But it would be San Diego State, Nevada, and your Colorado State Rams.
New Mexico is right there.
Really? I thought that they looked bad. Maybe it's because the only game I watched, they got blasted by St. Mary.
Correct, but they didn't have house. New Mexico was very, very, very good the last two games they were in Vegas. They played Toledo, Rice, and Pepperdine, just like a bizarre tournament. But they beat Rice by 34 and beat Pepperdine by 20, and Donovan Dent and JT Toppin were really good. But yes, Nevada is right there, as you mentioned. And Colorado State, I mean, look, Colorado State is like rapidly approaching like just don't screw it up status. Like they have two non-D1s on the schedule. Presumably they'll win that. They have Denver at home. They are going to win that game. Denver's really bad. They have four games in the non-con left that like matter. Colorado at home, Washington on a neutral, St. Mary's at home, and Loyola Marymount on the road. I think if they go 2-2, they're going to enter Mountain West play just in like don't screw it up mode.
And with how the Mountain West has been, I mean, don't screw it up could be, you know, I don't know if they played 20 or 18, but it could be going 13-5.
Right. That's just win your home games, right? Like that's.
Yeah. And then split the road games. Yeah.
Right. Win your home games and beat the bad teams on the road. So like beat New Mexico at home, lose to New Mexico at the Pit, beat San Jose State at home, beat San Jose State on the road, right? Like The ones you can't afford are like the bat, like Wyoming, I think, is better than they've been than they were last year, but like you're gonna have to be Wyoming on the road.
Air Force.
Yeah,
Air Force. Fresno. Yeah.
San Diego State, you can lose to it on the road. You don't have to do anything crazy.
No.
So, they looked awesome. I mean, I know Creighton just like really kind of pissed down his leg, didn't play well, but like it's hard not to love watching this Colorado State team. The way they share it, the amount of shooting they have on the floor. I just think the weaponry, and I know Cartier didn't even play really against Creighton because he had a back spasm, but like the weaponry that they have with a 4 and a 5 and Scott and Cartier, who can like really pass, is so powerful. It puts so much pressure on you. Like watching Creighton and like how afraid they were when like guys were basket cutting off of Cartier or off of Scott at the elbows was really impressive. And then their freshman big, Rashawn Mbemba, who is a 6'7", 250, wearing number 21, like legit David Roddy clone. He's a little bigger, which is kind of a scary thing to think about. He's not quite as skilled, but like he was amazing. Like he was just throwing his body around, like hung around with Kalkbrenner, played 20 minutes. Like that was an unbelievable performance from Colorado State, and the type of win that will, you know, they got a 6 seed a couple years ago because their metrics were just amazing. And they had a big win, ironically, also over Creighton. Creighton is obviously much better this year. That their seed ceiling is all of a sudden very, very high.
And then for Creighton, obviously, again, the door's blown off. Trey Alexander went 1 for 16. Stephen Ashworth hasn't gelled yet either. And then Mason Miller was out, which, I mean, he's their fifth best player.
Asterisk.
But.
Asterisk.
Don't get me started on the asterisks, but basically it came down to they got punched in the mouth.
I think Trey Alexander's like really soft.
He's also really good though. Like
No, I know.
He's a good athlete, he's a great defender, he hits shots, he's now getting to the rim.
I just don't know that he's like an alpha.
I guess that's fair. They have, I believe, Nebraska on the road this week. Or no, they have Oklahoma State, I think, first on the road.
Yeah.
Which you got to win that one. And then I think they go to Nebraska.
Sneaky good Nebraska team so far.
A Creighton team that's a little soft on the resume so far. This was a pretty bad MTE on paper. Then Colorado State surprises them. Boston College and Loyola are complete afterthoughts at this point.
Yeah, Loyola had I actually thought Loyola played really well against Creighton. Like Creighton, it was 88-65, and I was like, this is the most impressive 20-point loss by like a team I've ever seen, because Creighton just shot the lights out. Creighton made 14 threes. It's like, all right, like tip your cap, ball game. See ya.
So you're not selling any Creighton stock. You're still in on them as a top 10 team.
Yeah, not super worried. It's funny. I think it was just such a. I will say, like, the Ashworth pipe has to slow down. Like, he is a game manager and shooter. He is not. I think I missed there. I think other people jumped in it more than I did, so I'm not gonna like claim the take. But if anything, it feels like Farabella is better than him right now.
Yeah, Farabella has actually been hitting shots. You know, this second year transfer. But yeah, when I sent my preseason top 100 to you for a QC. You're like, oh, you got to have Ashworth. He also did say you got to have Tristan Newton. So, bounces out. Did we already do the UConn, Texas, Indiana, Louisville one? No, right?
No.
UConn wins, even though Stephon Castle. Louisville was surprisingly competent, which I knew that they were going to come back to earth. And, you know, that was like a getting up for the big game. For whatever reason, Kenny can't get them ready for bye games. And then he had the famous quote, which you said was slightly out of context. Basically, he said they were flummoxed by Indiana's zone because like he knew Mike Woodson personally and knew that Mike Woodson hates playing zone. Therefore, he didn't expect him to play zone. But
yeah, I mean, it was a dumb quote by him. But yeah, like basically, if you watch the whole quote, a writer asks him, like, given that you know Woody pretty well, like, how surprised were you to play that he played zone? Because Woody has been, like, open even at Indiana, like, I don't play zone, it's not really my thing. Because every college fan wants zone, right? How many times have you gone on the message board and seen, why aren't we playing zone? So, yeah, he basically was just like, yeah, you know, it was a short prep. We would never have, he was the last person I ever think would play zone. We also were not worried. Like, he also said, like, in this quote, part of the quote, I kept getting cut. He said something to the extent of, like, we were not concerned about teams playing zone against us because we've practiced our zone offense a lot and we played against zones already this season, which is true. Lots of teams zone Louisville because Louisville doesn't have shooting. Yeah, Louisville actually played pretty well that week. That's, like, the funny thing. Obviously, they lost both games. Like, they played – like, I really thought they played well. I thought they made some real strides, and it sucked for them that they didn't get one. But then to play as badly as they did against New Mexico State today. I mean, obviously, look, it's Kenny Payne. Like, what are we doing? But they did not deserve to win that game. They really should have lost and probably should have lost by 10 and just got fortunate to hit a couple shots late and then let – attrition winning out in the overtime period. But yeah, it doesn't feel any safer. I actually thought that, like, there were moments there where they looked competent. Like, they looked like an NIT team, I thought, at times. And part of that was just, I mean, Indiana looked so bad. Like if you, I guess the way I would put it is this. If you watched Indiana Louisville and you watched Indiana UConn and you told me one of these teams is like a complete dreck, I think 4 out of 10 people would have said Indiana was that team and not Louisville.
I mean, I've watched a lot of Indiana so far.
I've watched, like, every game. It's weird.
I watched some of Florida Gulf Coast. I watched pretty much all of Army. I watched some of Wright State. I watched pretty much all of UConn. And I actually missed the Louisville game. And then I watched some today against Harvard. So I've watched bits of 5 of the 6 games. It's funny because the resume is still intact. We're like, in theory, they can just flip the switch and right, they'll be fine. But Ware and Renault, for the most part, have been very good. Just, they're getting, like, nothing from Mbako, nothing from Galloway or any of these bench guys. They put up a graphic today. It was like, Indiana's issues at small forward. And it's like, Mackenzie Mbako, Anthony Walker, and Caleb Banks. I'm like, maybe the issue is that none of these guys are small forwards. I mean, maybe Banks is. But Anthony Walker is no small forward. And by all accounts, Mackenzie Mbako plays absolutely no defense and can't shoot right now, which would make him not a small forward either.
Jim Root tweeted, Indiana is 360th nationally in points scored via the three ball. And I think Jordan Majeski tweeted something along the lines of, like, they're giving up the most points given out via the, like, from threes, and they're getting none back, which is not a great recipe.
And then for Texas, narrowly avoided disaster. Against, you know, they need a Max Asemus buzzer beater. I'm still holding off Texas takes until Dylan Dessou gets back. I thought he was going to be, you know, one of the top 100 players of the sport based on his time at Vanderbilt and how he closed the season last year. So I want to see him healthy. And obviously, Kadeen Shedrick had to sit against UConn because he couldn't play back to backs. So the team is still very much in flux, but they don't look like a top 25 team so far. Max Ace was predictably is kind of not, you know, his strengths have not been accentuated as much as they were at the low major level. Hunter hasn't really taken a jump. Mitchell's been good, but still nothing crazy. But I'm waiting until Dylan Dessou gets back before I truly make a call.
Yeah, it was funny. I mean, Mitchell was amazing. in the UConn game. And Shadrick was amazing in the Louisville game. And Dessou is theoretically very good. I'm just curious how it all shakes out. I think the one thing that I feel very vindicated on with Texas is that Max A. Smith is not like a carry the load offensive player. I know he had 23 today against Wyoming, but like in the real games that they played, UConn, Louisville, he has just looked very pedestrian. And that's okay, like for Texas to be like a fringe top 25 team. If they have a good front court and they have Tyrese Hunter and they have like all this talent around him. But like if you were picking Texas as like top 15, you need Max A. Smith to be a lot more than he has been for Texas. And he just looks so like so limited physically.
Completely agree. I mean, some people had him as a preseason All-American, which was crazy. I put him like 98th or something in my preseason rankings, which still is looking a little high. Do we have like an early call of who's like the best mid-major transfer so far? Is there any name that pops?
Not like best. Do you have one?
No, it's easy to think of the, you know, the Timberlake and Ashworth and all these guys that aren't.
There's, you know, I can think of a lot of guys who've been good. Like Javian McCollum is averaging like 14 points a game for Oklahoma. Who we can actually transition to next.
Okay, so Oklahoma, they're getting great mileage from Otega Owe, a former, top 75 recruit. John Hughley's coming off the bench, but he's coming along. You had texted me that Jaylon Moore looks good, and then your man McCollum. They're not even getting full potential Milo Zuzan, and they're still undefeated. They're probably ranked tomorrow, and they have a big game coming up on the 5th against Providence.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that's very obvious is, like, they look really athletic, which they have not, right? And part of that is just, you know, part of that was recruiting Tanner Groves. Part of that was COVID recruiting. Like, there's a lot there. But I thought that – I just think, like, eye test-wise, they look like a Big 12 team. And I think overall, you have to give Porter Mosier credit in that they're playing really hard and they're playing together. But they don't look like a team that's really figuring out its identity, which for a group that is as young as they are and as inexperienced as they are, is really impressive. Owe, as you mentioned, really good. Just an awesome slasher, active around the rim. Really like a 3-4, but just a darn good player. And that putback was huge against USC. His numbers have been great. McCollum as a shooter. Uzan as a creator. The Hughley Godwin center platoon is giving them good mileage, rebounding the ball with Godwin, and then skill level offensively with Hughley. They've got wings. You mentioned Moore, but also Latrae Darthard and Rivaldo Sorge, who's been active, played even a little bit of small ball 5. Like I'm kind of bullish. Like to me, I think this is like maybe a top 25 team. To beat USC was very impressive, and that was full strength USC.
Yeah, full strength USC. Controlled most of the game against Seton Hall.
Yes.
Seton Hall was chipping away at it, but Seton Hall is looking more like an NIT team. They look maybe one piece short. I thought Bediako actually played well in the game against USC, and Isaiah Coleman looks like a immediate impact freshman as well. But I think they're just one piece short there. USC at full strength. I mean, Kobe Johnson popped the most this tournament, I thought.
Yeah, Collier was just average. Johnson was really good.
And then Joshua Morgan's an elite rim protector. I still love the starting five for USC. Just maybe, you know, when I had him top 15 in the preseason, that might have been a little ambitious. But with Kobe Johnson, Isaiah Collier, and Boogie Ellis, I mean, talent-wise, skill-wise, that's maybe the best 1-2-3 in the country. Like Kobe Johnson's a surefire NBA player at this point.
Yeah, I agree with you. So I guess here's the question. Is it concerning that they haven't looked better given that backcourt?
I would say moderately concerning. They were dealing with obviously Bronny James was out, but then Iwuchukwu was out too, so their depth was getting a little tested. Kajani Wright hasn't really popped like we thought in a year or two. They've been going to Harrison Hornery off the bench, you know, as like a basically seventh man, you know, first big. So maybe some of their auxiliary pieces aren't as talented as we thought. But I still love this starting five. I still think this is, when it's all said and done, a top 25 team.
Yeah, I agree it's a top 25 team. I just, you know, when we say oh, three pros, you feel like you're missing something when you watch them. Like Oklahoma shouldn't be just as good, if not better, talent-wise. That's how they felt. Maybe that just means Oklahoma's really good. But we'll see. Iowa, I thought Seton Hall just didn't have enough firepower. I think it's just, it just feels very similar to last year, where you play them in real games, they just don't have enough dudes. I thought Iowa looked fine. I think they're very bubbly. Owen Freeman really does pop when you watch him. He's going to be really good for them.
So does Laji Dembélé.
Yeah, they're doing. This is a really good. Like really good situation for them because they can they're force feeding both those guys minutes. Fran doesn't really want to play guys 36 minutes a game anyway. They're getting minutes. They're gonna be like huge breakout guys. They won't necessarily have to hit the portal for a big to replace Cricky, but Cricky is good enough to keep them there now. Like he's an important piece to their team, scoring the basketball around the block.
Absolutely, yeah. And in that Iowa Creighton game last week, Cricky was unbelievable. Just raining mid-range jumpers, but you were correct. Yeah, when he moves on this year, you just slide up Freeman. I think the only other guy that he might be their only loss, only definite loss this year. Everyone else can come back for a COVID year. I think Perkins and Pat McCaffrey. Yeah. So they're in pretty good shape long-term for this, you know, developing the young guys and keeping that progression going. I did realize that given our last recording time, we haven't hit any of the tournaments before this.
That's true. Do you have big thoughts on those tournaments?
Well, I'm haunted by Providence's loss to Kansas State. Everyone's telling me, oh, yeah. I mean, this happens every year. Like, Providence loses a non-conference game, I'm haunted by it. People tell me to get over it, and I tell them they don't understand how this stuff works.
I was going to say, I feel like this whole team has just been full Cooley vibes. Like, Cooley loses that game to Kansas State every time. Cooley plays these bye games a little closer than he needs to be, but, like, he's still winning them. Cooley blows out Wisconsin at home out of the blue because it's the dunk, right? Like, this team is just... It's like Kim English has just said Cooley, right?
I mean, the Wisconsin game wasn't because it was a dunk. It was because they were, you know, they had piss run down their legs.
Yes, but that's just that. But that always happens at the dunk. That's what I'm saying.
The like, bye game thing is a real conundrum that I've been dealing with. Because yeah, I thought it was just Cooley. Like everyone else can blow out their bye games. Like Butler and Seton Hall can blow out their bye games. Providence, new coach, bunch of new players still.
Coach talking about KenPom?
Yeah, they're not. They don't put their foot on the neck. Well, I guess or whatever the expression is.
I think my only real bye games take or first week tournament takeaways is like, nobody's touching Houston. Houston, by the way, is up to number one in KenPom, which I didn't notice until just now. I guess it happened today, even though neither team played. So I guess it must be like, who did Houston beat that moved up today? I don't know. Either way, Houston is now number one in KenPom. I'm not sure I totally buy that, but they have been impressive. They've blown out everyone they've played.
They have at Xavier on Friday, I believe, so.
I don't see how Xavier hangs in there.
So Do you think that Houston is a worse matchup than Purdue for Xavier?
Yes. Because Houston has elite guards.
What happened to your Braden Smith victory lap from 20 minutes ago?
Okay, fair. But I think Houston...
Braden Smith is better than Shed, right?
Yeah. Well, I guess the thing for me with Houston is, like, the way Houston's going to play with its guards is going to be a bigger problem for Xavier, right? Like, Xavier's guards are... Like, the theoretical, like, sort of strength of the Xavier team is talented young guards, and Houston's going to put those guys in hell all night. And, oh, by the way, they're going to score on them because Jamal Shedd is going to, like, bully Trey Green.
Is Xavier like Iowa? Like a bunch of these teams. They're still really in wait-and-see mode, but...
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. We did... What MTE was Xavier in? I guess while we're
they
on
were in
Xavier.
That four teamer with Washington, San Diego State.
Oh right, yeah. I watched the first half of that Xavier Washington game. I guess it really devolved into chaos. But the takeaway from that one was St. Mary's got crushed by everybody. But then they went out and crushed Davidson. So I guess we're on alert as if they're back. That tomorrow they're playing Utah. Utah, another one of those teams like your Xavier, Iowa, Seton Hall, Iowa State, where we're still on a fact-finding mission. So that'll be a nice litmus test game for both teams as well.
So the biggest thing with San Diego State is that Jaden Ledee is all of a sudden like a...
Rothstein tried to warn us. I think we were getting the Jaden Ledee, you know, buy stock now tweet since he was a freshman at Ohio State.
Yeah, it's the boy who cried wolf.
Right.
I didn't believe it.
Because we got Ohio State, then we got TCU, we got every step of the way. He must just be incredible in practice, like out of this world.
People keep tweeting he's like a top five player in the sport. Like I saw, like people were like Goodman tweeted out National Player of the Year odds, and there was like 10 people in the comments seriously replying like, what about Jaden Ledee? If Jaden Ledee wins National Player of the Year, I'm going to, like, shit myself.
Well, because he's the KenPom guy right now, right? Or besides Edie, obviously. But I think in the KenPom Player of the Year, he's super high.
Yeah.
Which, the only game that San Diego State lost, right, was to BYU.
Yeah, we should talk BYU.
It was a sneaky wagon. I had to get eyes on them myself. Was that Friday night or last night where they played NC State? I don't know how sustainable it is, but they didn't have Traore. And they just kept pushing the ball and hitting shots. Saunders was pulling up for threes in transition. They were getting, you know, 7-8 different guys scoring at will against NC State. And now, again, NC State's in that category with Xavier and Utah and all those teams. But... it's not like they were just beating up on guys in the 300s. Like, they've been just waxing teams that are at least decent.
Yes. It's wild how much green is on their KenPom page. Like, they're ripping people on the glass. They're hyper-efficient. And, you know, I don't know for sure. That, I don't know for sure that any of the teams they've beaten are that good, right? But the way they're doing it is impressive. I mean, this is a full whole better than some of the parts, because their starting group is like Trevin Nell and Noah Waterman and Jackson Robinson. He's coming off the bench, but isn't really good. Traore is like. Who's the guy who even gets like an exhibit 10 on this team?
I guess Richie Saunders gets signed by the Miami Heat.
It's nuts.
And so NC State, we don't know really anything about them yet. Arizona State and Vanderbilt are both in a lot of trouble. Stack just made Chili Donovan's hot seat list. Arizona State got their brains beaten in by BYU and Mississippi State. And they almost lost a bye game, I think, right, as well? So both those teams look terrible. So
I think the thing that's wild is, and this is approaching all-time vindication for you, Brad. Maybe the four, like, least the four worst situation high major coaches right now would be Kenny Payne, Tony Stubblefield, Ben Johnson, and Stack. Stack is maybe not fair to keep group into that.
No.
But Stack is, like, feeling it a little bit now. All those guys have no coaching experience.
Yeah. Throw in Mike Hopkins.
Yeah.
Throw in Steve Wojo. There's just no reason to do it. Like, I've never been a high major college basketball head coach, but I imagine there's a learning curve and guys get better as they go. So when you can work out your kinks and kind of learn what you're doing at, say, Fairfield, when no one cares really if, like, you lose a bad conference game in February to Niagara or Canisius, like no one cares. Like, it's all about those 3 days in March anyway. You kind of learn and hone your craft there. And then when you get the high major job, you're already ahead of the game, as opposed to your first time being a head coach is on this pressure stage with everybody living and dying with every result.
We should probably talk to Paul briefly. It is real bad.
The roster isn't even, like, that bad. And now Jalen Terry's been out. Mac Etienne just got back. But, like, Elijah Fisher was a top 50 recruit. Nelson was good last year. Like, this team is not devoid of talent. Now, I put them last in the Big East for a reason.
Do you think they have more or less talent than Georgetown?
They have less talent than Georgetown. You know, DePaul teams have had real talent before, and they always flop. And this team has less talent than some of the more talented DePaul teams.
Right.
I saw Tony Stubblefield saying, well, oh, they're young this year, before they had Javen Johnson and Emoji Gibson, but they weren't that good with those guys.
Right, that's the problem.
But they need a full... A little bit more.
Go ahead, sorry.
They need a full reset. Like, I saw Trilly saying... Rashawn Berno, like, that feels a little too cute. I think they need to go with a retread guy.
I think the interesting thing will be what level of retread will want this job. Like, they're paying Tony Stubblefield right now like 1.3.
That's it?
Not get good coaches with that money.
I mean, could you get – I mean, I'm going to mention Kyle Smith for, like, every job because of Washington State's goofy position they're in. But, you know, there's Kyle Smith. There's Tim Miles. Kyle Smith
would be, like, inspired, right? Like, Kyle Smith, yeah. You'd at least be saying, like, we know we're not going to have more talent than you, but we're going to outfight you, right? Like, we're going to out-recruit you. We're going to out-evaluate you, right? Like, DePaul will never win doing what it's trying to do right now, which is, like, take high major retreads who are, like, formerly talented, right? Let's spin back the offseason and say, like, DePaul gets Arterio Morris and Arterio Morris doesn't get in trouble and actually plays.
Yeah.
It wouldn't fix any of the problems. They just would be, like, less shitty.
Right, like, instead of Chico Carter, you have Morris. So you're more talented, but... He's still not making up. Like look at where Georgetown is with Jay Nepps. You know? If you're DePaul, who's one realistic guy who you think that they could get, who you think could maybe make the difference?
Man. Huh. It's just hard because you need someone who's like shitty enough. Like Darren DeVries is not the right hire. I actually like the Kyle Smith thing. I really do.
You hear that, Dwayne Peavy?
It just doesn't feel very Dwayne Peavy-ish. Like, oh, it's hard. Like, it's really hard. Like, Rob Senderoff, to me, would be interesting at that job.
What about Todd Kowalczyk?
Same thing. 1D Todd.
It's going to be tough because if there's NIL issues, if there's coach salary issues, there's obviously – I mean, I don't understand how they can have a single fan at this point. A single fan who's younger than 30 years old.
I do not know that Tony Stubblefield makes it to that Louisville game.
I don't even know who their assistants are as –
the name that people will talk about as an interim is Matt Brainy, who's a special assistant right now.
And he was the James Madison guy at one point?
Right. And he also coached Marist. Their assistants right now are Bino Ranson, Paris Parham, and Steve Thomas.
Okay, moving on to the next MTE. We have the Georgetown Invitational between Georgetown, Georgetown American and Mount St. Mary's. How much of these games did
I didn't see any. I apologize.
You didn't turn to FS2 for any of these games?
No. I'm bad.
I mean, Georgetown escaped against American. They needed a comeback. Seems like their fans are still okay, though. They're still kind of coolly we trust.
The fact that they have only lost the one bye game is, like, settling. And they basically just – Georgetown just has to beat Merrimack, beat Coppin State, and not embarrass itself. Everything else the rest of the year, it's gravy. Like, they can go 3-17. It's probably okay.
I mean, Styles and Epps have been legitimately very good. There seems to be too much optimism around Ishmael Massoud's return.
Well, people, yeah, they're 292nd in defense. I don't think Ish Massoud is going to face that.
I mean, I tried to tell people. I've seen Drew Fielder play a ton in high school. He's on the same team as Garway. He was a province commit. He doesn't play any defense. And now I see a bunch of Georgetown fans being like, oh, wow, he doesn't play any defense. And they held out hope for Ryan Mutombo, which seems to be just kind of a whole waste of time. But the real issue is, I mean, Cooley trying to convince everyone he could only have 10 scholarship players here, really 9.5. And then they get one injury, and it's all of a sudden a ton of depth issues. Again, in the year 2023, rebuilding is a choice. We'll see how it works out for Georgetown long term, but there's really no reason why they had to be quite this bad this year.
Yeah, it's bad. It's real bad. What else do we have to get to? I mean, I'm sure we're missing stuff. We apologize if you don't get to your team.
How about
Alabama gave up like 1 million points to Ohio State? And Oregon. That's not great.
Yeah, this was another team like Iowa State that played a soft schedule, was running these teams out of the gym, and people were super in on. I was unable to catch the Ohio State game, and then the Oregon game was on like Flow Hoops. I did watch a decent amount of Oregon Santa Clara, and then Iowa State knocked the crap out of Santa Clara.
Yeah, I watched a lot of the Santa Clara at large talk can maybe stop for a second now, finally. Well, my God.
Well, slowly we'll get the James Madison stuff disappearing, the Princeton stuff, the Liberty stuff. You know,
I mean, Liberty is like, Liberty is beating FAU away from being like legit at large by buzz. If Liberty beats FAU and then loses, even if they lost at Alabama and at home to Grand Canyon, they go into the CUSA play with a real chance to go like 26-4 and get at large. But Liberty also has like the ultimate net schedule. Beat Charlotte, beat Furman, beat Wichita, beat Vermont. None of those wins might matter, but they're all good teams.
I'm not sure if I'm buying any of the, you know, I saw Fanta put them all the back of his top 25. Like, just kill me. James Madison, Princeton, Liberty. I don't think any of those guys make it to the end of the year as at-large candidates. Princeton especially, like the Ivy is pretty strong. I get that they've looked good and they've done a ton away from home, but the margin for error is just so tiny.
You need like a real win, right? Because Rutgers neutral really gonna be that? I don't know. I will say though, give immense credit to them. Because like, think about this. Like, and again, we'll see if Jared Haas winds up getting fired at Stanford. We'll see if he writes the ship, whatever. Maybe he would get better talent than Princeton, but I guess I don't know how you watch what Stanford's doing, and then look up at Mitch Henderson win 23 games with Tosan, Jalen Llewellyn, Ethan Wright, and Drew Freiberg. Lose Llewellyn, Wright, and Freiberg to high majors. Then turn around, still make the NCAA tournament, go to the Sweet 16, lose Tosan, lose Keyshawn Kelman, lose Ryan Langford. Like an NBA Exhibit 10, a North Power 5 starter, and then a mid-major starter, and turn around and be 6-0. Right? Like, Mitch Henderson clearly knows what he's doing. Right? Like, if I'm Stanford, I don't think it needs to be all that complicated, right? Like, hire the guy who, worst case, would recruit the same exact players and have the same exact team, and they would be less shitty.
Although when a high academic school in the Northeast tried that, he ran it into the ground. Boston College with Steve Donahue, recruiting all his Ivy League guys. Didn't work out. And now Stanford will be in that very same conference, the ACC. Switching to another MTE. I'm sure that you watched some of the Mohegan Sun, right? Northwestern, Mississippi State, Washington State.
Yes, sorry, I was pointing on which tournament that was.
And URI, any thoughts on that field?
Mississippi State is better than I thought they'd be.
Hubbard right. might win our well. Marcus Burton still probably the odds-on favorite, but Josh Hubbard could win our sub 100 recruit most points per game out of nowhere.
Yeah, Hubbard is great. They've just like they've played three like real teams, and every game has been a different guy stepping up. Like Hubbard won the Northwestern game for them. Trey Fort won the Arizona State game for them. He had like 20 points. And then in the Washington State game, like Jimmy Bell had a really good game. They got Rick super balanced. Like Deshaun Davis had a good game. Cam Matthews, like they're very balanced. They still defend and they have a little bit more juice offensively because of Fort and Hubbard.
And then we have a good field here that I unfortunately did not get to see any of. That was the NIT. With Baylor, Pittsburgh, Florida, and Oregon State. Did you see any of this?
Yes. I thought Florida really looks the part. Obviously, Baylor's the story. And Baylor, to me, is like a Final Four type team. Their guard play is ridiculous. I mean, Ray J Dennis has really exceeded my expectations. He's so comfortable making plays. His floater game is awesome. He's like, talk about a guy who chose the right program. And then you have Walter making shots. I know he's quiet against Florida, but he's such a good shooter. Bridges has been a huge, huge deal for them offensively. Hyper efficient. You have Love and Nunn, like, and Missy's running around blocking shots and flying around. Like, that team is very real. And I thought Florida, to play with them, especially when they didn't shoot it great and were without Mike Hanlocked in at the five, that was impressive. And I thought that, you know, with Kugel still kind of finding a stride, he had 25 in that game, but he had struggled the rest of the way. They have looked really good when Zion Pullin is on the floor, right? So he was suspended for the first three. They blow out Florida State, they blow out Pitt, and then they play wire to wire with Baylor. Pullin has 17 assists and 2 turnovers. He's great around the rim. He lives at the free throw line. Just another guy who can get paint touches. Clayton, he takes a lot of pressure off Clayton to create and lets Clayton be a shooter, a secondary scorer. The big men, like the young bigs, like Hanlocked has looked good until the injury. Condon looks really good. Like Alex Condon's another big. Him and Thomas Howe, I believe is how it's pronounced. Him and Thomas Howe are somewhat similar to like the Owen Freeman Dembele thing where they're playing now. And it's great because they may not have to portal that five spot, especially when they have, or that forward spot, especially once they get Hanlocked and back next year. Hanlocked will be back like this week, but I'm just saying that Hanlocked and will also be there next year. But like that Tyrese Samuel spot theoretically won't have to get portaled. So he's been good. Like I thought Florida looked good. Pitt a little bit disappointing. Like maybe the Bub Carrington hype was just so much that I just couldn't, my brain couldn't comprehend that he wasn't like elite. He's interesting. He reminds me, like, stylistically, he's a little bit more creative, but he reminds me a lot, like, role-wise of Blake Wesley. Like, kind of come out of nowhere, not sure what he is. Oh, shit, now he's a one and done.
That's a great comp. Style play, big guards, similarly ranked.
Yeah.
Team that might sneak in the NCAA tournament.
They have an interesting stretch ahead. 3 high major games, all winnable. Mizzou at home, probably should win.
Yes.
Clemson at home, probably should win. West Virginia on the road, probably should win. Is Kerr back by then? I think no.
I think Kerr's first game back is St. John's. Is that right?
I thought Kerr had a 9-game suspension.
Maybe I'm wrong there.
If Kerr's back for St. John's, he's playing against Pitt. If he's not back, I think he's not. I think it's 9 games, which means he's not back until UMass.
And you were talking Florida. One team that Florida destroyed won their MTE.
Yeah.
That was Florida State, who beats Colorado. Another team people got a little too excited about. Jameer Watkins has been terrific to start the year. 14-6, 4 assists. Almost 2 steals a game. He's someone in that prototypical kind of wing creator versus a wing. You know, he was at VCU, who loved that type of player. Now he's at Florida State, who really loves that type of player. Come back from his injury with a huge season so far. Again, I want to see more of Florida State here. But undoubtedly a nice neutral court win over a Colorado team that will be at least solid.
Yeah, I was ready to love Colorado, and then I just was very underwhelmed against Florida State. Obviously, Simpson and De Silva are very good. Neither guy had a great game. I understand that. Cody Williams has had some moments. I thought he did a nice job, like, not forcing stuff, like, getting to spots. The thing that really concerned me was, like, they seem very intent on playing Eddie Lampkin 25-plus minutes a game. And in the first game where it felt like, all right, we're in a talent neutral setting, he got killed off the bounce. Like, got destroyed in switches, got destroyed in hedges, like, could not defend in space. And that's why he was a role player at TCU, is that He's a high activity rebounder, energy big, but he cannot really guard. And he's not a guy who's going to protect the rim. So if you're not going to protect the rim and you're not going to be able to switch and you're not going to throw it to you on the block, like, what are you really out there for 30 minutes a game doing?
Totally fair.
So it'll be interesting to see how that one develops. But I think they're a good team. Like you said, I think they're sure, for sure a tournament team. Florida State, a little bit better. You know, don't think they're a tournament team. But to me, the issue for them is the point guard. I know Worley has been a little bit better, but he had a great game against Colorado, has been quiet otherwise. So not quite there in Florida State yet, but I think they're improved for sure.
Next MT, Wisconsin beats the doors off of Virginia and then beats SMU. Had to come back against SMU.
Really had to have this weekend, right? They needed these two.
Yeah, because they blew the home game against Tennessee. They got destroyed against Providence. Virginia had some momentum after beating Florida the week prior. And yeah, Wisconsin's still not getting anything from Connor Asesian. He's kind of weirdly in the doghouse, but that certainly really stepped up. I watched a good chunk of that Virginia game. It feels like that was 15 years ago. We had a Carter Gilmore tip dunk. Blackwell's been playing really well. They were finally hitting shots, and they're in a good spot heading. I believe they have Marquette this weekend. I think Saturday they have Marquette at home.
Yes, I have that as a tentative going to that game.
Ooh.
The thing for me with Wisconsin that is becoming more apparent is I just don't know that they have any firepower still, right? Like, they've been more efficient offensively. Last year they were 140th. This year so far they're 23rd. But, like, there's not enough that scares you offensively.
I can say that definitively, having just, you know, watched them in person. Kim plays this ridiculous drop coverage. It just drives me crazy. Now, like, their analytics, their, you know, 2-point percentage, all that stuff is good. I guess he just wants to keep the bigs around the basket. I guess that's the analytical thing to do. Well, like, Providence is too athletic to be giving up these wide-open 15-footers. Now, Chucky Hepburn and Stephen Crowell and those guys couldn't hit any of them. But all these mid-major guards are. Anyway, enough about Providence. Where to next?
I'm drawing a blank. Like, I mean, I'm sure there's more.
Yeah, I'm scrolling through now.
It's in Virginia, just quickly, because we talked about Wisconsin about Virginia. Are you concerned? Like, the Florida win is nice. It was no pulling though. They really struggled with West Virginia. It just seems that they're kind of in a similar spot where, like, they're not super dynamic offensively. And the real concern is they're in full bust mode with
Jordan Meyer. Yeah.
I was a little skeptical, but, like,
I mean, and even the good NEC transfers are not good in their first year. Like, Quincy McKnight was awesome by the end, but, like, at the start, people were calling for his job. Same with Kane Broome. And the NEC is worse now than it was then. And everyone was just so convinced that stylistically, Meyer was such a good fit. Oh, analytically, but, like, Merrimack plays a zone, right? Like, he was a 6'8 center in the back of the zone. Now playing a pack line man-to-man, but... Yeah, once Jacob Groves was named, like, the opening night starting center, that should have been the canary in the coal mine. Because it looks like their guards haven't really taken the step forward. You know, Beekman hasn't been playing at an All-American level.
You just don't get anything offensively from Ryan Dunn.
And here's the second part of this. The long-term outlook on the Cavs, right, is... If Ryan Dunn and Reese Beekman are off of the NBA this year, I mean, next year you move the needle with, you know, Dante Harris, Isaac McNeely, Andrew Rohde, Leon Bond, and Blake Buchanan? Because we know that transfers.
It's going to have to be Bond and Buchanan, and then second year Rohde growth. And
because we know that newcomers don't usually stick in Virginia. So I am more concerned about Virginia long term. I think this year that they'll probably make the tournament, probably like 8 or 9 seed. They'll be fine. It's kind of weird. You know, we were talking last week, prompted by me, that we got to stop having the conference heart to hearts after every result. To this point, every conference is like pretty balanced. Right, like there's more positives in like the ACC and the Pac-12 than you would have thought in the preseason, and more negatives in the SEC and the Big Ten. Is that fair to say?
Okay, like take me through it a little bit more.
All right, so in the ACC, teams that are here, let me go to my ACC right here. Teams that are better than I would have thought in the preseason. UNC.
Yeah.
Florida State. Miami.
Yeah.
I mean, Notre Dame. Not going to really matter, but they've been better. NC State. Clemson. Pittsburgh. So about half the league is... I guess that doesn't really matter. Half the league better.
Wake's
7 out of 15 being better than anticipated doesn't really matter, I guess.
Right. Wake's a little worse. Georgia Tech's a little worse. Definitely worse. Jeez.
Yeah.
Louisville's a little worse.
Duke's a little worse. Might
be a little worse. Duke's a little worse.
All right. So maybe I'm crazy.
I don't think we super missed on any of these conferences.
And then just for the sake of the Pac-12, Arizona's a little better.
Oh, we should. That's the one thing we really haven't talked. Arizona, Michigan State.
I didn't watch this game.
I watched the second half when Michigan State played really well. Walker was good. Hogard was good. The problem is they just haven't gotten enough of that. Like, they need consistency there. And Arizona's really good, right? Like Boswell and Caleb are really great players. Keyshawn Johnson's been a huge impact. You can throw it to Ballo. I think these like athletic wings off the bench and Bradley and KJ Lewis have been like just like a nice presence for them. Where like they're super low usage, they defend. I think if you were going to make a team number one overall, other than Purdue, it probably had to be Arizona, right?
Absolutely. I don't see any reason why you have to put Purdue over Arizona. I think aesthetically, at least, Arizona's looked probably better, I'd say. I think you'd probably take the Arizona guards over the Purdue guards. And outside of Edie, I think you probably want Ballo, Johnson, and Crevis over any of the other Purdue bigs. Is that fair to say? Maybe not with Crevis, but like you would take them over Gillis.
Yeah.
First in Coffin.
Oh man. I don't know. Purdue guys are hard to take out of that system, you know.
That's fair. And then circling back on my previous point, you can completely disregard that the ACC and Pac-12 are doing better than expected. Because the Pac-12 certainly is not.
Yeah, because USC has been a little disappointing. UCLA,
so Oregon's worse. Washington's probably a little better. Colorado's a little worse. Arizona State's worse. USC's a little worse. Oregon State, who cares? Stanford's worse. Utah's fine.
Cal's worse.
Cal's worse. So again, half the league being worse, half the league being same or better. You know, who cares? So the Pac-12 and ACC are not doing better than expected.
The only thing I have left to flag on this pod is the only result from when we were podcasting, which is Minnesota got worked by San Francisco in the city of San Francisco, not at San Francisco. They played at the Chase Center where the Warriors play.
Sure, that was packed house. Nothing like Minnesota, San Francisco in an NBA arena on a Sunday night on CBS Sports Network.
Minnesota impressively had two different starters not score.
Which starters?
Isaiah Enan and Braden Carrington. Four of their five starters combined for 8 total points.
Nico Medved, come on down. I guess
that is going to be like the most like forecasted coaching change of the cycle, and we'll see if it actually happens. But
I mean, there's no way Nico can turn that down. Like, the Big Ten is one of the two secure conferences.
You would think.
I guess
Nico, he's a different cat.
Early carousel talk. Do you want a little update on potential firings and replacements? I know we said Mitch Henderson and Jared Haas. Yeah. We said Nico and Ben Johnson.
DePaul. I think the real thing to watch is how many of like how many of Tony Stubblefield and Kenny Payne are coaching on December 9th. Not convinced it's both. Not convinced either is there. But probably a little bit more comfortable that Kenny's there.
And then the Louisville coaching search, that's a tough one. I've seen people throw out Jerome Tang. My personal guy is Buzz Williams.
I still expect that the name will be Mick Cronin that people will talk about. Whether it's winds up happening or not, I think that will be the name that people will be like centered around, is like Louisville's main target being Mick Cronin.
I think I'd rather have Mick Cronin than my guy Buzz Williams. And certainly more than Jerome Tang. Yeah, that one's not really clear. Dominoes, though, right? If how about this? If, let's say, Jerome Tang gets Louisville, if you're Nico Medved, would you rather have Kansas State or Minnesota?
Minnesota, I think. If Minnesota has the NIL, that would be the only thing.
Right, that's the caveat with every single recruiting and or coaching search question is how big is your NIL war chest?
I think K-State, I feel better today that K-State has good NIL than Minnesota.
But Colorado State famously does not have good NIL, right?
Not great NIL.
Their NIL is not equivalent to their on-court performance of the last 10 years, you'd say?
Correct.
Trying to think of any other hot seat stuff. Oh, Central Florida. I know we had thrown out Chris Mack in the preseason. I saw Trilly put out Bobby Hurley, which is just such an uninspired hire.
Bobby's going to be trying, man. UCF is weird where, like, they've actually been a little bit better than I thought they'd be. And then they just completely lay an egg today against Stetson.
Those are, like, the biggest school in the country, right? So.
Yes.
One of their like 60,000 students has to have a rich parent, right? This is odds. Probability. Yeah, that's all I have, I think.
Yeah. This has been a long one. Appreciate everyone sticking with us. Again, if we forgot your tournament, MT, whatever, send us a tweet. We'll catch up with you next week. I'm sure we will talk about everyone's team at some point this college basketball season. It's been fun. I'm on the road again starting next week. Been home in upstate New York. It's been a lot of fun. But back to the Midwest, back to going to games 3-4 times a week, and we will see you all on the other side. By the time we record next week, I think we'll have had some conference games, Brad. It's a wild thing to say.
That is, yeah, so the Big Ten starts on what, Friday?
Thursday or Friday. No, Northwestern plays Thursday.
And then we have some ACC play coming up shortly after, I believe. So, cool.
All right, folks. We'll see you all next week. Appreciate everyone listening. Hopefully everyone joined their Thanksgiving.